Okay, hello internet family. This is Anjanette Potter, also known as Adam's Rib, and you are listening to this is Happy April 1st. So I've been so used to introducing this as 31 Days of Global Feminism. So we are now at April 1st. I looked up what we could celebrate this month. One of the choices is Black Women's Health. The other one is Black Women's History Month. So the problem that I have, and I really never have a problem with celebrating Black Women's History. I am a Black woman, have been Black for the past 55 years, never gonna be any other color, never divesting.
Oh, Shanae, the Academy says that
Never gonna be any other color. So my decision was, I think this is going to be a month that doesn't necessarily have a central theme for me, except for what spring represents for me. And so let me see here. So this particular podcast is going to be a continuation, because as I said before, I'm going to talk about more about the Manosphere. So this is part 8 of the Manosphere, and this is part 2 of me talking about religion's place in the Manosphere. So unless you've been under a rock, and I'm going to talk about religious teachings and their place in the Manosphere. Because many of you know, I read to you out of Marsha Warfield's post. If you were paying attention to the last podcast, I talked about I read from Marsha Warfield's post about how Christianity is oftentimes used to perpetuate racism and sexism and homophobia. I also shared the account of the woman who wouldn't leave, who didn't want to reconcile with her abusive husband, and how, that was you. She was punished for it. I also shared my own testimony of being punished or disciplined for not wanting to participate in a forced marriage. Now, I personally am not a divester. I've never dated any white guys. I don't really feel like I'm missing out on anything by not fooling with white guys. Because number one, I tend to evaluate men by their character. Even though my preference is Black and I've only ever dated and been involved with Black men, I don't see white men as a come up. I don't see white people as a come up. So that's kind of one of the reasons why I don't fool with male advice givers like Kevin Samuels and different ones. Kevin Samuels to me tore his behind when he did the little panel and had all these different women on there, except for Black women, to discuss why Black women have such a hard time getting married. Now, I have a whole, first of all, this is a Black man. I'm sick and tired of Black men calling themselves kings and can't treat you like a queen. Or a king that needs outside help or needs you to be like some other ethnicity in order for them to love you. Okay. Today I'm going to talk about the so-called Jezebel spirit. Okay, and the reason why I'm going to talk about that, and it is important, because the Manosphere that you've been hearing about is mostly made, has ties to white supremacy, has ties to militia and different other groups, has been tied to many of the mass shootings that you've been hearing about from white guys who can't get their way in a relationship, so they decide to tear us all up. I also want to talk about the so-called Jezebel spirit as it pertains to black women. Because, you know, there's a religious group, like I said, I shared my own testimony of a pastor who tried to drag, to try to draw me into an arranged or enforced marriage. And he tried three times. Each time I prayed, and each time the Holy Spirit gave me a lack of peace. Now, it's one thing for a pastor to recommend somebody because they know that you're single and they know that you're looking to be to settle down. I don't have anything against people who recommend people, like say you're single and they know somebody else that's single and you seem like you would be a good match. That's not a problem, because there's, you know, if it doesn't work out, you're free to walk away from that situation and go on about your business. That's not a problem. Where I have a problem is where you are given consequences for turning a man down sexually. Churches that are using the ethnicity of your skin as an excuse to regulate whether or not they should act safe towards you. I told you, this is, if you are not ready for, I just recently gave my YouTube channel a bit of a facelift, because, you know, I looked at some of the other channels that I was looking at. I'm going to be spending my weekend uploading content and creating blogs around some of the information that I've gathered. I have one content creator on YouTube that I kind of want to put, you know, shed a spotlight on. And then I have some others that emphasize missing black women. So unless you've been under a rock the past few days, I'm pretty sure you have seen clips of the shot around the world, I guess you would say, or the slap or the punch, depending on how you want to define it. So you know that Will Smith punched Chris Rock. So I saw a blog post here recently, and I am not a black person who really cares much about the white gaze. I feel like for the past several centuries, black people have been under the bondage of always having to care how we present ourselves in front of white people. And to be perfectly honest with you, it gets a little tiring. It gets a little tiring, especially when I watch white person after white person after white person show their behind on a regular basis, lose their temper, shoot up things. Like, I'm not a black person in the dating world that thinks that white is a come up. I don't feel special. I can remember when I was in junior high, you know, middle school mainly, maybe high school, where you know, the thought was if a white guy was looking at you, that you must be exceptionally cute. You must really have it going on. Because wasn't too many of them checking behind black women, at least not in a very positive way. So if they were trying to make you their woman, then there must be something. I like that attitude. I never really embraced the attitude. It was just sort of a mindset that many people had. Once I got into by the time I graduated high school, I did not have an attitude. Okay. Number one, I have always been a person that has been rather eclectic when it comes, like, I'm eclectic with my music. I, you know, like to change up. If I'm listening to a lot of R&B and I want, and, you know, if I'm riding in my radio and I'm listening to a lot of R&B and I want to change up and listen to some rock, I will. If I want to put it on the country station and hear a little bit of what they're doing, especially in the 90s, I would do that. If I wanted to, there was a station called CD 101 where they played a lot of grunge and alternative rock. I would do that. I pretty much would listen to anybody who was talented enough to play good music. Hold on, I'm gonna mute myself for a minute because I need to address something. Okay, so I pretty much would listen, could roll with anything. Being an only child, I found out that I had a half sister, but not until probably in my 40s. And by the time I found out about her existence, she was already deceased. So I never really got to meet her or get to know her and see what kind of person she was. So my life was spent as an only child, being an only child. I pretty much played with everybody, all ethnicities and both genders. You know, I didn't have any siblings. Even though I'm from a large family, you know, I played with my cousins, and my cousins were almost like siblings. But for the most part, being an only, I pretty much played with, you know, pretty much played with everybody. I played with, you know, all kinds of different ethnicities. So I'm not going to insult your intelligence and say that I don't see color, because we do. We see race all the time. Even with this thing with Chris Rock and Will Smith, there's been divisions. And as a black person, one of my favorite YouTubers made that same inference. One of my other YouTubers that I like to listen to, titled one of her recent postings, would this all be an issue if Jada were white? And there's something to that, because right now I see the tide turning, and once again, the denomination that I came out of is starting to throw Jada Pinkett Smith under the bus. So I was like, well, I kind of do want to throw my hat into the ring, and when I saw that, I'm like, well, I'm starting to see how this is going to tie in, because I really wanted to get on the Jezebel thing, because I don't want to interrupt it, because it is such vital, it's such a vital teaching. And it's a vital teaching because there are several different denominations right now that use Jezebel, and it's an anti-black woman sentiment. It is a racist sentiment. I don't get down with Jezebel teachings, because very seldom are Jezebel teachings ever applied to people who actually act like they have a Jezebel spirit. It's usually the person who is acting very much like a Jezebel who turns right around and accuses someone else of being a Jezebel. So I'm going to read. I have this book called Growing in the Prophetic by Mike Bickle. And he touches on the so-called Jezebel spirit. So I'm going to read the portion of the book where he discusses Jezebel. And I posted on my Facebook this morning, and I was just like, it's funny how you become Jezebel as soon as someone wants to have sex with you and you don't want to have sex back. Because believe it or not, there are people who weigh, and I'm like, okay, isn't that a little soon? Like, you know, first of all, it's a cover for human trafficking. It's also a cover for sexual harassment. Okay, anytime you are being coerced or pushed sexually against your will, always know that it is never God's will for anyone to press you for sex, especially if that person is not your husband. Okay, if the person that they're trying to get you to sleep with is not your legal husband, chances are God does not want you to sleep with them. And I'm saying this based on biblical research. Now, there will be spirits, which we have already touched on, believe not every spirit, because there's folks out here using witchcraft, y'all, to try to make us think that God is saying things that he ain't saying. Okay? So, I'm going out of chapter 14, Women as Prophetic Ministers. The ministry of women in the church is a hotly debated topic in many circles. Unfortunately, the effectiveness of the church has been greatly diminished because the ministry of women has been so limited. The intransigent, and sometimes chauvinistic position of some in the church is a result of long-held stereotypes about women, dysfunctional male-female relationships, and a truncated view of early church history. My purpose here is neither to, and this is him talking, is neither to put forth a comprehensive theological framework for women in ministry, nor attempt an exegesis of the New Testament texts that relate to the role of women in the church. My purpose is to cite some examples from church history and how women function in prophetic ministry at Metro Christian Fellowship. I guess this is the church that he's at. So he goes into women throughout church history. The significant involvement of women in the ministry of Jesus is well documented. Women were the witnesses of his crucifixion and resurrection when males were conspicuously absent. Luke declares that the women who had followed Jesus from Galilee still followed along as Jesus was carried to the tomb. Matthew tells how they kept watch over the sepulcher after the men had left. John records that the group of people immediately beneath the cross consisted of three women and one man. Though it broke all kinds of social and religious traditions, Jesus made a point to include women in his ministry. And it's true, they supported his ministry financially. Many of them did. It is, now he doesn't say that in the book, I'm saying it right now. But it is little wonder that the prominence of women continued into the development of the early church. A number of women served as leaders in the house churches that were a part of the larger church in the city of Rome. Some of those mentioned were Priscilla, Chloe, Lydia, Apphia, Nympha, the mother of John Mark, and possibly the elect lady of John's second epistle. Paul mentions Phoebe and refers to her as a servant, literally a deaconess, in the church of Cenchrea. Paul also talks about Junia, referring to her as being an outstanding amongst the apostles. Some have debated the exact meaning of this verse. Until the Middle Ages, the identity of Junia as a female apostle was unquestioned. Later translators attempted to change the gender by changing the name to Junius. Women also functioned as prophetic ministers. Philip, who was selected to serve the apostles as one of the seven men appointed to the administration of feeding the poor, was head of the church in Caesarea. He had four virgin daughters who were recognized as prophetesses in the church. Some believe that these prophetesses became the standard and model for prophetic ministers in the early church. When Pope Miliolides proclaimed that two female followers of Montius were heretics, he contrasted them with Philip's daughters. Explained that their problem was not that they were women prophets, for this is what Philip's daughters were, but rather that they were false prophets. And, you know, we're going to get into that a little bit later. Eusebius mentions one Quadratus, a man famous in the second century, who shared with the daughters of Philip the distinction of a prophetic gift. The church quickly spread from its birthplace in Jerusalem into areas where the predominant culture was pagan. Greco-Roman, and believe it or not, many of, now I'm going to take a little bit of an aside here. So much of the stuff that you're hearing about the so-called Jezebel thing is actually something that's heavily borrowed from paganism. Okay? A lot of paganist teachings involved here. Greco-Roman or both. So in these settings, women commonly held high positions and social and influence in social, political, and religious circles. The idea of women having a leading influence in the church was therefore not thought of in negative terms. So, I'm not going to go into this whole thing because I want to get to a specific stereotype that I'm trying to throw down here. So, let's go into, I think, his own belief at his own church, I'm guessing. We have had a number of women in our midst who have, so women's ministry at Metro Christian. We have had a number of women in our midst who have made profound, accurate, and edifying contributions to our prophetic ministry. While much of this has been behind the scenes service to our leadership team, we are enthusiastic about women moving into the prophetic arena. The limits and extents of a woman's function in the prophetic team at Metro Christian Fellowship is the same of that as a man. We no longer give prophetic people a prominent public platform, men or women. Paul Kane, who we, and you can look him up or whatever, because I'm sure if someone's listening, they're gonna find, because I'm not sure. Paul Kane, who we regard very highly, speaks to our church about 2 to 3 times a year. However, he gives most of what he receives for us to our main leadership group, either in person or by telephone. If a woman has the same level of prophetic revelation that Paul Kane has, she will be given the same honor and platform that Paul Kane has, whether that platform be public or to our main leadership group. Any woman preacher who has the anointing to teach will be given some opportunity based on her own proven teaching gift. Over the years, we have had several women preachers speak to our whole church when we discern the gifting to preach. At Metro Christian Fellowship, we have identified a prophetic network of about 250 people who regularly receive dreams, visions, and prophetic words from the Lord. They meet periodically with Michael Sullivan as the leader. Michael also gives pastoral oversight to the interim ministries and the established prophetic ministries in our church. There's a prophetic council made up of about 30 people, many of whom are women. So basically, he's giving, a little bit of background on how things are done at his church as far as women in leadership. So let's get into stereotypical women. Stereotypes, prejudice, and unfair biases are commonly directed against women. This powerful reality throughout the Western world hinders the work of God. Our deeply embedded stereotypes primarily come from our culture. They exist at our church as well, and we need to strongly address them on the proper occasions. We realize the vast importance of a woman's impact on the present and future generation, and we therefore highly honor and esteem the ministry of a mother in the home. But we do believe that women are often called to function outside the home to serve the kingdom of God. There are also stereotypes about women and their psychological makeup. One common stereotype is that they are very intuitive but don't have the proper restraint to control the emotional side of their nature. I don't think that this is a fair stereotype. I believe that some women certainly can be described that way, but men are like that as well. I think it is too generalized a stereotype. It should not be the reason used to hinder women from ministry. Both men and women are intuitive, but in my experience is that more women than men have a strong intuitive aspect in their nature. A man's stereotype is that he's always in control. As you can see, not always. but out of touch with his and other people's feelings. That's not always true either. Many times, and this is me taking a break from reading and actually just talking, many times I think men are encouraged to kill that part of themselves and not be too sensitive and not be too in their so-called feelings. So back to the book, dysfunctional relational skills amongst men and women have caused many problems both in society and in the church. Some men have unfounded fears about women in ministry, for example, that women will lose their femininity if they lead, and that women are more prone to deception, both of which are untrue. If they are afraid to allow women to prophesy or preach. The problem is exacerbated by some of the radical feminist movements. I wouldn't say that. I disagree with that. Consequently, some men tend to dig in their heels and resist valid biblical expressions of women in ministry. I do believe that if men had been honoring women in the church all along, it might have diffused some of the radical feminist movement in our society. That I kind of do agree with, being that feminism is sort of a reaction to unjust treatment against women. And it is a movement that is meant to not only give women equal rights, but also give them human rights. Basic human rights are oftentimes being ignored. Your right to walk down the street safely, your right to not have anybody harm you sexually, your right to be protected if you're underage, different other stuff like that. I do believe that a lot of the feminist fight for equal rights, to me is really correctly titled The Fight for Human Rights. The fight to be recognized as a whole person. I just posted to my Facebook this morning, which I think I'm going to share on the Adams Rib Media Ministry page. And I put your Jezebel equals my fragile male ego can't handle that you're a free moral agent that chooses not to fornicate to prosper. Okay. So for me, the issue is women in leadership, but it's also some serious, really, really terrible behavior that's being covered up for. So, so I do believe that if men had been honoring women and recognizing them as human, the way God intended from the beginning, we probably wouldn't have a lot of injustices if people were being treated like they're people instead of objects. Probably would, if you know, just a whole lot of stuff that probably wouldn't have had to take place. The radical feminist movement might have been minimized. The negative effects, which, like I said before, I don't necessarily agree that the effects of the radical feminist movement have been negative. So we disagree on that. There is one practical way the church functions as a prophetic standard bearer to society by honoring both women and children in a way befitting the grace of God. Now we're getting to our girl Jezebel. So now we're going to talk about the Jezebel spirit. I'm going to give you what he's talking about in the prophetic, and then I'm going to talk about the racial connotations of the Jezebel spirit. So one of the most understood issues relating to prophetic women in the church is the idea of a Jezebel spirit, particularly when the term is defined as a controlling woman who dominates men. And I'm going to tell you how our girl Jada Pinkett Smith is being factored into here. I heard something very troubling on one of the other YouTubers, and the thing that was said was, instead of hitting Chris, maybe Will should have hit Jada. Now, I'm putting that out there because I'm going to come back to it a little later on in this podcast, because that's an extremely troubling attitude to have. One of them, so I talked about that. Jezebel spirit is not a biblical term. No such thing. However, there is a powerfully negative Jezebel type spirit or attitude in which people seem to be immersed. When a woman stands up to a man and confronts him in any way, even if the man has major problems with insecurity and leadership ability, the woman is sometimes referred to as having a Jezebel spirit. Some women do have an inappropriate domineering spirit. Once again, I don't agree with everything that's being said here, but I did underline what I do agree with. Some men in the church, here we go. Some men in the church have the identical problem, but too many women who have a legitimate leadership gift are labeled Jezebels simply because they clash with a man who has a controlling personality. I underline that because I agree. Sometimes these women are a little wounded. Perhaps their social and relational skills need refining, but men need improvement in their social skills too, especially those who are insecure and try to manipulate women. Some women simply won't allow such men to dominate and hinder their place of service in God's kingdom. I happen to be one of those women. These women can really suffer from unrighteous judgments against them because they simply spoke up and challenged a man who had a wrong spirit. So a wrong spirit in this case really means a wrong attitude. So this type of action does not make a woman a Jezebel. It trips a wire in my own soul when I hear a woman quickly written off as a Jezebel. It can be a crushing emotional blow to a woman. It is usually an unfair judgment that can unjustly cause her to repress or neglect her ministry gift for years. I believe that both domineering men and dominating, I think it's interesting that he calls women domineering but calls men dominating, need to be confronted when hindered from having too much influence in the church. But when some leaders see domineering men, they tend to wink at the problem and say, well, he just has that strong personality and that's just the way he is. But when women do the same thing, all kinds of ju un unjust spiritual implications become attached to it. So Jezebel's is seduction to immorality. I believe the idea of a Jezebel type spirit does involve an element of domination and control. Between Queen Jezebel and King Ahab, Jezebel clearly seemed to be the more dominant. However, Jesus defined a Jezebel type spirit very specifically in terms other than domination. Okay, and he's talking about the controversial text that people use to talk about Jezebel in Revelations. You allow that woman Jezebel, who calls herself a prophetess, to teach and seduce my spirits to commit sexual immorality. Now, that was the thing that he had against that particular church. A Jezebel spirit can then be described as one who leads the people of God to embrace immorality in a carefree way. Now, I'm running into more male pastors that are doing that than I am female. So I always think it's interesting when someone wants to call you a Jezebel, and they call you a Jezebel because you're not submitting sexually to men that you shouldn't be submitting to. Like I said before, if you are being asked or pressured to sleep with a man that you are not legally married to, then the leadership in that church, it is important to pay attention to what you get shamed for. Okay, because many times cults, and this was a cult, it still is a cult, will use social pressure to get you to make wrong decisions. So you have to be careful of being, pressured or pressed into making decisions without a whole lot of information. And some people think you don't have a right, some men think that you don't have a right to question them. Men cannot be trusted. So therefore, you have a right to question any man, especially when they're talking about trying to, like to me, for me, sex is a very intimate act that should only be shared with someone who cares enough about you for you to have that strong connection, because it's meant to have ties. There's no such thing as, no string sex. It's meant to have strings, because it was originally meant for men and women to come together within the bonds of legal marriage and solidify their relationship. Procreation, of course, is, also the thing, but if you are really into somebody, think about being in love and how when you were in love with that person, being intimate with them made you even tighter with that person. Do you see what I'm saying? So, that's the purpose for it. So someone who tries to take it out of its original purpose and starts, well, if you don't want to sleep with me, you can't prosper and this, that, and the other. Like if someone even, I'm gonna continue to keep reading this, but I want you to hear this because I'm setting the stage here. I'm gonna go a little over what I normally would go over to talk about this, because and so today's live might be a little late. This primarily refers to someone with a seducing spirit. When we talk about being seduced these days, we tend to think of it as something women do to men. But some strong male leaders, even within the body of Christ, have a potential to seduce women. They have a very powerful sensual or emotional impact on women. In this way, men can be as seductive as women. Consequently, a man can thus be likened to Jezebel. I think the most seductive, and I'm in media ministry. I think the most seductive Jezebel type spirit in the world today is found in certain aspects of the media industry, which is very effective in desensitizing and beguiling the nations to commit acts of immorality. They have promoted the prostitution racket and the X-rated and worse film industry. These are certain members of the entertainment industry who are the ones who perpetuate the stereotype of the woman as the seductress. So remember, I talk about one of my favorite accounts, The Take, who talks about different theatric and literary roles and tropes that are promoted, especially within the world of film and television. But it is their love of money that pours the fuel on the fire of seduction in our society. They, more than anyone else, have the characteristics of Jezebel. Now, on that level, I kind of do see that, and the church. Let me say this, the church and the entertainment world have kind of always, the church has always kind of had the stance on theater and on the media, the entertainment industry as being, morally corrupt, which if you hear, listen to some of the accounts of the Me Too movement, and the whole casting couch thing, you can see how they would view it that way. Unfortunately, many times you have the church criticizing the entertainment industry for behaviors that are being found in the church. Okay, the proverbial person in a glass house that is throwing stones. Let me get back to the book. So women should get a break anywhere it should be in the church. The prejudice toward women is often due to dysfunctional relational skills that exist in both men and women. In these negative situations, the pastors are sometimes called controlling by the women, and the women are sometimes called Jezebel by the pastors. This is all ridiculous, and both the men and the women need to be healed. I agree to some extent, depending on the situation. I'm going to go ahead. Let me see here. We need to esteem and make room for women with valid leadership gifts in the church. Some pastors need to be less defensive and insecure in their leadership styles. We also need to replace the harsh judgments between men and women with the honor and patience that Jesus lavishes on each of us who are still immature in our character, wisdom, and gifting. So a term that has been being abused lately is called growth. And the reason I have a problem with people calling certain things growth is because you only call it growth because it supports your if it only supports your way of thinking, then it's growth, when the person could have been just as valid to disagree. Okay, so let me get here with the Jezebel stereotype. Now let me see here. So I ended the last podcast by going into God questions and talking about what, and they pretty much kind of said the same thing that Mike Bickle says in his book. There really is no biblical interpretation. What you have is a few people who will take that portion of the book of Revelation and talk about why I'm visiting onto her a bed of iniquity and this, that, and the other. She was also given space to repent. Anytime you hear a man of God talk about your purpose being something really, really sexual in nature, you are being led down a wrong road. I have unofficially gathered information about cults and pastors who get into trouble with their penises. And the most common way that things go left is when a pastor decides that your purpose, and I have air quotes going, is something sexual. Okay? Liking your, you know, whenever you're hearing that God, that it's God's will for you to do something sexual, that's when you really have to be watching. So how does this tie into racism? I'm glad you asked. I'm trying to find. So stereotypes of black women, black American women related to sexuality in. So I'm going to read the abstract from this article. I'm not going to read the whole article because if you've ever read a journal article, you know they can be very, very, they can be very long. And I don't really want to go into all of that. So I'm going to read the abstract. One of the things I learned during my undergrad is if you didn't have a whole lot of time on your hands, say you had a paper due and you didn't have time to read an entire journal article, typically if you read the abstract before the journal article, you pretty much get the summation of the article without having to read all of the gory details. So the abstract is saying, Intersectionality theorists and researchers suggest the importance of examining unique stereotypes associated with intersecting group identities. We focus on the unique stereotypes of Black women in the United States related to sexuality and motherhood. In an online experimental study, 430 undergrads from a Northeastern U.S. university were randomly assigned one of the four conditions in which they viewed a photograph and read a description of a target young woman. The target's race, white versus Black, and pregnancy status. You ever wonder if other people of color feel like, well, it's like we're watching this tennis match between white and Black people, even though we're suffering under white imperialism and colonialization too. I always think it's interesting when things, you know, that inherent institutionalized stuff. The target's race and pregnancy status, pregnant versus no pregnancy information were varied. A Black female target, pregnant or not, was perceived more negatively on terms related to historically rooted societal stereotypes about sexual activity, sexual risk, motherhood status, and socioeconomic status than was a white female target. But there were no differences on items related to social stereotypes. A Black target described as pregnant was also perceived as more likely to be a single mother. So think of all the negativity that single mothers, or especially unwed mothers, have been receiving lately, and to need public assistance than was a white target described as pregnant. Current findings, along with evidence that societal stereotypes have damaging effects, underscore the importance of diversifying images of Black women and increasing awareness of how stereotypes affect perceptions of Black women. Findings also highlight the value of research employing intersectionality to understand stereotypes. Okay. So, in a nut, Black women, if you were told that the Black woman was pregnant, people were more likely to think of her as being on assistance and unmarried. So let's talk about this, the Jezebel stereotype. There's an image here, and the thing says Black hooker. So the portrayal of women as lascivious by nature, of Black women as being lascivious by nature, is an enduring stereotype. The descriptive words associated with this stereotype are singular in their focus: seductive, alluring, worldly, beguiling, tempting, and lewd. Historically, white women as a category were portrayed as models of self-respect, self-control, and modesty, even sexual purity. But Black women were often portrayed as innately promiscuous, even predatory. This depiction of Black women is signified by the name Jezebel. So K. Sue Jewell, 1993, a contemporary sociologist, conceptualized the Jezebel as a tragic mulatto, which, in, you know, if you look back on old theater tropes, she was. Thin lips, long straight hair, slender nose, thin features, and fair complexion. This conceptualization is too narrow. It is true that the tragic mulatto and Jezebel share the reputation of being sexually seductive, and both are antithetical to the desexualized mammy, which I plan on doing one on mammy as well. Caricature. Nevertheless, it is a mistake to assume that only or even mainly fair-complexioned Black women were sexually objectified by the larger American society. From the early 1630s to the present, Black women of all shades have been portrayed as hypersexual, bad Black girls. Jules' conception is based on a kernel of historical truth. Many of the slavery-era blacks sold into prostitution were mulattoes. Also, free-born light-skinned women sometimes became the willing concubines of wealthy white Southerners. This system, called placage, involved a formal arrangement for the white suitor or customer to financially support the black woman and her children in exchange for her long-term sexual services. The white men often met the black woman at what they call quadroom balls. Okay, so you've heard of quadroom balls, a genteel sex market. The belief that blacks are sexually lewd predates the institution of slavery in America. European travelers to Africa found scantily clad natives. Keep in mind that these are people dressing in their own native, they're in their native garb or native dress. This semi-nudity was misinterpreted as lewdness. White Europeans locked into the racial ethnocentrisms of the 17th century and saw African polygamy and tribal practices as proof of the Africans' uncontrolled sexual lust. Europeans were fascinated by African sexuality. William Boltzmann described the black woman on the coast of Guinea as fiery, warm, and so much hotter than the men. Okay, so that's a little bit of background there. I'm trying to find... So how does that tie in to the Okay, so let's look at this one. Revisiting the Jezebel stereotype. The overt objectification and dehumanization of black people has a long history throughout the Western world. However, very few researchers have explored whether such perceptions still exist explicitly, and whether black women are sexually objectified at an interpersonal level. Now, let me say why this is so important. Because think about one of the movements that I'm hearing about here lately is Protect Black Women. Being seen as unprotected, and really we are. And in light of the whole Will Smith thing, comedian Tiffany Haddish was quoted as saying that Will getting up on stage and punching Chris Rock was the most beautiful thing she had ever seen. Now, one of the reasons for that, if you've read on Miss Haddish, you know that she has a past history with domestic violence with an ex-husband. And you know the fact that many black women perceive themselves to be the least protected. I, like I said before, am getting together and looking up information on different YouTubers that are doing the work of that talk about missing black women. We've already heard the term missing white woman syndrome. Okay. So it is safe to say that many black women feel very replaceable. Or disposable. Disposable would be a good word. Not only by the outer community, but sometimes even within our own community. Here lately, there's been a lot of teachings within religious circles talking about the Jezebel spirit. And so I ran into a guy in one of the Facebook groups that talked about, he quoted this figure. He said 70% of black women have the Jezebel spirit. Now, I already am not big on people who label women as difficult for, exercising their free moral authority. If a woman does not feel that it is right to do certain things, then she shouldn't be forced to do them. And I also am listening to the divest community, and you listen to the divesters. Oh, the key to peace of mind. They sound like white. They sound like black men who habitually black date out. The key to peace of mind is to marry outside your ethnicity. Yeah, for men who don't act any better with their preference. Okay? And really, these teachings, and white men have had a long history of stereotyping black women and using those stereotypes as an excuse to completely ignore our sexual boundaries. So one of the reasons why I'm calling attention to the spirit, and this is going to be a two-parter because I'm getting into an hour and I have to get dressed to be able to go live. So this is going to be a two-parter, but one of the reasons I want to delve into the Jezebel spirit and expose these false teachings is because they're being used. I just left a church where it's basically being used to manipulate women. Okay, well, you don't want to be thought of as a Jezebel, so go over here and fuck old brother so and so, or give him some coochie, so that you can go, so that I can put you on and let you preach. Like I said before, I'm not going easy. I'm going hard on these pastors that continue to keep using the scriptures and abusing their authority over women, children, and everybody else. If you are an abusive pastor, I am coming for you. I'm coming for your head. Okay? I will be the true prophet or mouthpiece of God that I'm called to be, and I'm going to continue to come after you with your spirit of witchcraft, with your spirit of deception, with your spirit of whatever. Okay? It is time for us to do more than just talk about different things like this that are plaguing our community and hurting us. This hurts us. When you don't uplift the women in your community, you have a problem. You cannot have a strong community if you are not regarding the women. I'm going to talk about this some more in the next podcast. So how does this pertain to Jada? So like I said earlier, I don't know what it is. A full-grown man can make the conscious decision to get up on a stage and punch another grown man who made the decision to, and somehow it becomes the woman's fault. So some footage here has been released, and it seems to be that edit, and I guess they seem to think that Jada wasn't too hurt because she really got off on watching Will get up and punch Chris Rock. Like I said, we already had Tiffany Haddish saying that it was the most beautiful thing that she saw. And like I said, if you're a black woman who feels underprotected, then the thought of a man getting up and defending your honor is gonna sound like a good thing. I'm not saying that Will was okay to do it. I think it was very inappropriate. I come from the old school of black that restraint is always the best thing because of what you stand to lose. Now they're, talking about disciplinary action. I hope that they don't try to snag the award that he's worked so hard to get. I heard this morning where people were like, "Well, they're focused so much on Will Smith. Well, what about Chris?" I personally tried to put myself in both of these men's shoes. So, like I said, I'm Team Jesus. I don't have a dog in this fight. And to show you just how far-reaching this thing has got, we're also seeing where they, decided to cancel actress Zoe Kravitz. And I thought that was interesting. I'm like, okay, isn't that a bit of a reach? Because just because she does, some people are very fiercely anti-violent. They just don't believe in, that that's the way to settle your issues. And so I'm like, I'm wondering how much of that is tied to this whole Jezebel thing. But as, time started going on, people are now starting to blame Jada for his actions. Well, look at her, she got off on that and blah 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 blah. He was laughing at first, but then he saw her hurt feelings and decided he had to take action and this, that, and the other. So now things are flipping, and now all of a sudden Jada is getting thrown under the bus. Well, maybe he should have hit her. I found that very problematic. I found it incredibly problematic. And like I said, I have to get off here because I have, this is going to be, there's going to be a second part to this. I was planning on doing this earlier in the week, and I ran into some warfare of my own. So I'm gonna go in. So the second part of this tele, the, so this, so Jezebel is going to have a part two, and I'm gonna talk about how problematic, our attitudes toward black women are, because they are very problematic. I'm even gonna hit on the whole divest thing and how this ties in. How black women are viewed is extremely problematic in our society, and especially, I will give you an example. So I typed in black women being mistaken for prostitutes. All kind, now you probably won't find it now, but all kind of blog posts came up where black women were approached by white guys, being offered to be paid for their services. Maybe it should be yes, all black women. Okay, so pretty much almost every black woman I have run into has had to deal with some wrong attention from an entitled white guy. These are dangerous because people tend to place conditions of worth. Thank you, Holy Spirit. People tend to place, and the church world isn't any different. People tend to place conditions of worth on women's ability to turn down requests from men. So being labeled a particular way within a church is very problematic. Being how you are labeled by different males is very, especially if the label means that they have a right to take liberties with you and fondle you or touch you or behave inappropriately towards you based on the label. Even though we know theoretically, especially as far as the law is concerned, you have a right to say no, no matter what a man perceives your label to be. No matter what a man thinks that your category is or what your label is, no still means no. Your ability to say no is not tied to the label that a man wants to give you. Okay? And, because we have 50 states worth of people, I think I'm gonna take this to an hour and a half. So, many times people want to place, especially men, want to place labels on women and then adjust their behavior according to the label that they have given that woman. The problem is, many times if you receive the wrong label, you may get some behavior that you don't want to get. Okay? And so Jezebel's stereotype against black women is so troubling because, it's a way of being nice, to this. I said to someone once, I said, it's funny how robbing a bank is a crime. right? We all agree that if you go in and you rob a bank, that it is a crime. Now, you go in and you rob this one bank. The other banks can't come forward and say, well, she's nice to all of us, and she's never robbed any of us. And she's come in here and whatever, she bypassed us. So it must have been something that that bank did wrong, right? They don't get to say that. If you rob one bank, you are just as hit. If you rob one bank, you are just as likely to be jailbound as if you rob 1,000 banks. You may not get the same time as you would get if you robbed 1,000 banks, but you are still seen as a criminal. You are still going, if you get caught, you are still going to be under due process of the law. None of, you know what, the other banks can't come forward and testify to your character. None of that gets to happen because you robbed a bank and they know that you're guilty. If they have you on the surveillance cameras, you are going to jail. But when it involves sex crimes, only when it involves sex crimes do women become, as on trial as the person who perpetrated the crime against them. And sex crimes are crimes. I did a blog post called Why Do Wallets Get More Love Than Women? And I talked about the whole thing of being in line and someone being right up in your space. And I found it interesting with the whole Will Smith thing that they tried to establish a history of violence by involving two pictures that involved a white man trying to kiss Will, which I'm like, miss me with the BS. With two white men who walked up on Will and tried to kiss him. Okay, now he's West Philadelphia born and raised. You all know if you were raised working class or whatever, what straight man is gonna let you walk up on them and just plant one on them? They don't know you. And one of the people was Jim Carrey, ironically. Okay, one of the people who have come against him the fiercest on this punch thing. And so I'm like, okay, so what we not gonna do is play the violent black man game. Either way, we're also not gonna dog Chris Rock for not fighting back. Okay, for one thing, like I don't judge Chris for not hitting back because it took me till the second time Will said, "Keep my wife's name out your effing mouth," that I realized, oh, this is real. I thought it was staged, so it took me a minute to even realize that the whole thing was real. Okay, and I don't know if he, so it took me a minute. So I imagine nobody expects to get up and present something, an award, and get hit. Okay, so before you judge Chris Rock, like I said, I mean, it couldn't have been me because I like Will and I like Chris both. But honey, if Will had it hit me, we would have been scrapping. We would have just been two fighting black folks in the history of the Oscars. You just would have had to criticize me for making us look bad if that's where your mind is. And I'm gonna give a whole separate post to that too. Okay, because this whole thing has been a hot mess. It really has. It really has, but it's been a hot mess for a whole lot of different reasons. It's a hot mess because it was a messy situation, but it's also a hot mess some of the opinions that I am hearing, about all involved and the criticisms tell me, we got an even deeper hot mess on our hands because of some of the opinions that I've been hearing, especially when you think that Jada deserved to be hit. Like, I don't believe, first of all, I don't believe Chris had it coming. In order for me to think that Chris had it coming, there would have had to be a long-standing history of Chris verbally bashing them. As a comedian, when you talk about the comic world and comedians, that's just such, if that's the case, then It's some white guys waiting on Ricky Gervais when the Golden Globes come, if he ever hosts again and everything, because Lord. But I have a little story to tell you that kind of puts the whole violent black man thing in perspective. So years ago, when Arsenio Hall had his very first talk show, the Arsenio Hall show, I can't remember how early on it was, but it was also kind of early on. Like, Arsenio had been around a number of years by the time he got his talk show. Arsenio has been around since the 80s. And I'm talking like probably early 80s, like maybe even 70s. Like, he's been around a minute. So at the time that he got his talk show, Roseanne Barr had got her sitcom. So Roseanne Barr, I'm saying Roseanne Barr, we also know her as Roseanne. So at the time that Roseanne became, I had been a fan of Roseanne Barr's before she got her talk show. She actually, I was a fan seeing her on Rodney Dangerfield had this Young Comedians thing, and that's where I first fell in love with Roseanne's comedy. She's a very gifted, very funny comedian, female comedian. So she, was on there and she did her thing. Her thing was being a not a housewife but a domestic goddess. So she did her, and this was of course eons before the whole Valerie Jarrett thing, which is inherently one another part of that unconsciously racist stuff. Okay, so she had her, she, I looked up and the next thing I know she's getting a sitcom and I'm like, okay, cool. So she got her sitcom, and when she got her sitcom, she was married. She was married to this guy named Bill Pentland, I think it was. So she was married to him. In the course of her sitcom, she leaves him, and her private life was starting to become, she was an example of someone whose private life starts to be overshadow their, professional life if you're not careful. So she left her husband, Bill Pentland, for the guy we know as Tom Arnold. So at one time they were married. She had left the husband that she had started her career with and, left him to be with Tom Arnold and eventually married Tom Arnold. So Arsenio, during his if you're a true Arsenio fan, you remember the first show and you remember where he had the thing, things that make you go, got so popular that CNC Music Factory made a song called Things That Make You Go, And so that was his opening monologue, was Things That Make You Go, So when he was talking about things that make you go, he shed some light on Roseanne Barr's decision to leave her first husband for her second husband, Tom Arnold. And he said some very unflattering things about her weight and several other things. So in the course of all of this, he said his monologue and said what he had to say. Well, now Roseanne gets blamed for it, but at the time, in the midst of, following these remarks, Tom Arnold shows up at the Arsenio Hall show, ready to drag Arsenio. Right. And y'all worried about a punch on a stage. He showed up at the Arsenio Hall show and he was gonna drag Arsenio. He was gonna whoop his behind, about to warm him up. So, of course, security was pretty beefed up and the fight never happened. He never got to Arsenio to give him the trouncing that he felt that Arsenio deserved. Okay, and I'm sure there were all kind of mixed reactions at that time. He didn't get a chance to beat him up. Nothing ever happened, and I'm glad nothing ever happened because Anyway, fast forward to the Arsenio reboot, where Arsenio gets his second show. And he had as a guest Tom Arnold. Few decades later, and fame later, and divorce later, because they had since divorced, he wound up having a successful career of his own. He's since had a successful career of his own, and I think one or two, I think he might still be married to the same woman, I'm not sure. One or two successful marriage, because I didn't look up any of this information before I start telling this story. But he was on the show as a guest. They had since made peace, and they discussed that whole thing. And so Tom Arnold said, well, at the time, I was raised, my family background was, your wife tells you to go jump on somebody, and you go jump on them. Right. You didn't hear nobody calling him a savage. You didn't hear nobody saying, this ain't the hood, or this ain't the trailer park, or whatever the equivalent of hood is for white people. You didn't hear him being called violent. None of that stuff. Well, for one thing, the physical altercation never happened. But even in subsequent years, you never, far as I know, Tom Arnold was given credit for defending his wife's honor. It was seen as a natural reaction to defending, the woman that he was married to at the time, and not one and not liking the jokes that were around her face, like unflattering jokes about her weight. As a matter of fact, I'm trying to remember, I think Madonna showed up on the Arsenio Hall and tore him a new one. And because at that time, her and Sandra Bernhard and different ones of them were like, kind of tight with one another. I can't remember why they said Madonna was tearing him a new one. I think it might have had to do with that whole thing. Because some women are very, 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 very anti-fat shaming in your humor. So we are now in 2022, and we're. You know, I still follow Marcia Warfield, and she was talking, and her opinions have been, it's never just jokes. In other words, you don't want to be in the position of letting someone verbally bash you and then dismiss it as a joke. At the same time, and I'm going to talk about that in the next one too, because I'm starting to run out of time here, but I wanted to leave you with that story about another. Because these are three people in comedy. Okay, Arsenio's, very dear to the black community, one of our famous black comedians. Tom Arnold, also in comedy. Roseanne Barr, also a professional comedian. So these are, but the two people, but the man defending his wife is white, and so is his wife. So before we start, making Will a savage and talking about how violent black men are and feed into that whole violent thing, and I'm going to talk about that too as far part as far as part of the manosphere, and that is the defending of a woman's honor. Because every culture has teachings and trainings that have to do with defending a woman's honor. Very cultural. It's not just pertaining to the black community. It is, in fact, like I said about Tiffany Haddish, ironically also a comic, but it's like I said about Tiffany Haddish saying that it was the most beautiful thing she ever saw. What if you're one of the people who was seen as, because I do, and no one accused Roseanne Barr of being Jezebel. Or urging Tom Arnold, even though Tom Arnold himself said that him going and showing up to beat up Arsenio was part of, it was kind of at her urging. She was upset because of those jokes and he needs his ass kicked and this, that, and the other, and Tom Arnold was willing to deliver that ass kicking. So, if you're wherever you wind up listening to this podcast from, I want to hear what you have to say about this. Like, what do you think about the fact What do you think about it? But this Jezebel thing is going to get a part two. Jezebel is going to get a part two, and I'm also going to talk a little bit more about the whole Will Smith thing, especially as it pertains to the shift in wanting to somehow lay it at Jada's feet that, well, she didn't get up and get him. Well, first of all, if you saw her dress, you would understand why she didn't get up, because that was a lot of dress. Okay, so trying to catch him with all that dress, they don't show that the dresses are beautiful, but they don't show us no love with them trains. Number one. Number two, I really don't. I'm gonna talk about that too. How much are black women responsible for keeping the peace and mediating peace between two black men? Because we seem to get judged. It's almost like we're damned if we do and damned if we don't. So I'm gonna talk about that too, but I'm gonna go ahead and wind this up because mama gotta get dressed so that I go live a little bit later. I haven't had a chance to do this podcast like I really wanted to do it, because I've had a lot of other stuff going on. So this is going to be a part two, probably a part two and three, since I'm trying to keep my podcast down to under an hour and a half, because I know how I am when I'm looking at stuff on YouTube and listening to other content creators. I don't listen to them for very long. So, you guys have a good one. Enjoy the rest of your Friday, and I will see you live from Haps TV on several of the different platforms that I go live on. My Facebook personal and Adams Rib Media Ministry page, Twitch, YouTube, and the other places where my telecast goes live. So I will see you guys later. Smooches.
Hello, you have reached the message line for Adam's Rib Media Ministry. If you would like to give me a shout out, recommend some topics for discussion, or give an opinion about a topic I've already discussed, either on my blogs or here on my podcast, leave a message and I will get back to you as soon as possible. Have a blessed day. Bye-bye.